KMXT and Kodiak, this is the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Kayla DeRoche. Coming up this week, a new report states that increasing costs are making it difficult for new entrants to break into Alaska's fishing industry. Also, communities are looking at how Pacific cod declines in the Gulf of Alaska and the resulting cut to quota may affect their regions. That and more coming up on this week's Alaska Fisheries Report.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs. 1-800-992-4960 or online at alaskaboat.com.
The increasing costs to get into Alaska's fisheries are making it difficult for new fishermen to break into the business, especially in rural coastal communities. That's according to a recent report from University of Alaska Fairbanks and Sea Grant scientists. They worry that in an industry once defined by hard work, a fisherman's success now mainly depends on access to money. KHNS's Barrett Wilbur takes a closer look at fisheries access and how it could be improved.
In an industry without awards or CEOs, Jim Moore is a PhD-level fisherman. He's been trolling Southeast Alaska since 1971.
Required just a boat and a fishing license only cost me in the neighborhood of $15,000. And today would probably be in the neighborhood of $150,000. And I certainly, as a young person, wouldn't have been able to afford that.
2 years after Jim put his first hooks in the water, Alaska passed the Limited Entry Act. It created a set number of commercial fishing permits. For the first time, your right to catch salmon depended on having a limited entry permit. The state awarded them to people with the strongest fishing record. Moore got one. Others weren't so lucky.
When older fishermen reflect on those years and the ways in which the distribution of those limited entry permits divided families, 8 brothers, one of them got a permit, the others didn't.
That's Courtney Carruthers, professor of fisheries at the University of Alaska Fairbanks.
It started to really create long-lasting effects in terms of who had livelihood access, who ended up becoming successful, and who didn't.
As more and more fisheries were limited, the system was praised for professionalizing the fleet, conserving stocks, and making fishing safer. But it inadvertently created a trend that Carruthers calls a paramount problem.
So anyone is able to purchase a limited entry permit. So it sort of benefits those people that have access to capital. And it tends to be that outside fishermen have more access to capital, are wealthier, and buy those permits up.
After 4 years of research in rural fishing towns, her team just published their report. Permits held by people local to their fisheries have declined by 30%. Alaska's coastal communities are losing their rights to fish.
Globally, we're seeing these programs that have, you know, limited and commodified the right to fish have had really big impacts for certain groups of people, young people, low-income fishermen, rural communities, indigenous communities.
In 2004, Lindsay Johnson started deckhanding on a friend's seiner. A decade later, she'd worked across Southeast, Bristol Bay, Prince William Sound, and earned her captain's license. She needed her own operation.
It became clear that the fishing I knew how to do wasn't really in my budget. I could not afford the seine permit. Ultimately, I decided on trolling because I could afford it.
Market value for a Southeast seine permit today is about $230,000. A troll permit costs a sixth of that, $35,000. To afford that, plus the FV Sika, a wood troller, Johnson had to take out a loan. Actually, three.
I have a loan from a friend and the state for the boat and a loan from the state for the permit. It's more debt than I've ever been in my life.
In 1971, Moore needed a boat and a fishing license. But Carruthers' research shows Johnson is a textbook example of what it takes to get into fishing today. With experience, social fishing connections, good credit, practice running a business, and multiple state-sponsored low-interest loans, she made it, at least to the starting line. Without those qualifications, Carruthers sees a generation of would-be fishermen stuck on shore.
Fishing used to be this career that took anybody. There was kind of this option where you didn't necessarily need an education. You didn't necessarily need wealth in your family. There's this opportunity for you to work hard and to be rewarded. And the landscape's totally shifted now.
And as permits leave rural fishing communities, whether they're canceled, sold, or permit holders move away, they take the opportunity for young people to learn the trade with them. In communities where fishing is one of the few options to make money, each permit represents a business that supports families, buys groceries, and pays taxes. Losing one hurts the economic strength of the whole community, Carruthers says.
You see that all through Southeast Alaska, this huge dispossession of fishing rights. Boat harbors, you know, that used to have 30 boats have a couple.
And Alaska's fishing fleet is getting older. The average fisherman is a decade older than in 1975. The typical permit holder is now 50. Jim Moore turned 71 this year.
I've got my grandchildren now that are learning, and I'll be depending more on them to do the heavy lift. But I won't be retiring for at least another 5 years, maybe 30 years. Don't know.
Like Johnson, Moore is lucky. Many fishermen don't see anyone coming up to take their place.
They have to have a rich uncle or some leg up in the system. And I think there's a lot of concern, you know, looking 20 years, 30 years from now, who is it that will be able to access our fisheries?
Carruthers research includes a suite of policies gleaned from Canada, Norway, Iceland, and the East Coast that have solved the same problems in their fisheries. They range from setting up exclusively local fisheries, reserving fishing rights for young and indigenous people, apprenticeship programs, and more.
What's needed here is some policy shifts, not any changes in terms of what fishermen need to be doing. We really think it's a problem at the level of state and federal policy. There need to be some other options for entry.
The report asks the governor to set up a task force to work on fisheries access. But with Alaska's state budget in crisis, Carruthers worries there's a lack of political will to solve the problem, even with solutions on the table. In Haines, I'm Barrett Wilbur.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
Cod declines could have a devastating effect on Kodiak harvesters and processors. That's according to community representatives who attended the North Pacific Fishery Management Council meeting this month. At that meeting, the council decreased the Gulf of Alaska Pacific cod quotas by 80%. That's to address the sharply declining number of cod, which scientists say may be due to the blob, a trend of warmer water temperatures that moved into the Gulf roughly 3 years ago. Now, Kodiak stakeholders are looking at how drastic the after effects will be for the community. Fisheries analyst Heather McCarty spoke with the Kodiak Fisheries Workgroup about the cod situation at its meeting this month. In an interview with KMXT soon after, she said she thinks the cod decline will be devastating, and not just in the short term.
The scientists are saying, based on what they saw of the year classes and so on, that they anticipate that this could last up to certainly to 2020, maybe even to 2021. And so this kind of low resource situation is looking at us for the next few years. I mean, it's almost like a double, triple, quadruple disaster because it's not just 1 year.
Julie Bonney with the Alaska Groundfish Data Bank, a member organization for trawlers and processors, also spoke with the Kodiak Fisheries Workgroup at its meeting. She says the cod decline will decrease revenue for all groundfish gear types and make it more difficult for processors to fill their market demands. She says trawlers may try to balance the loss with pollock, and the rockfish program could give the community a boost.
So they have several things that they can do, but they're not going to be able to offset the loss of cod revenue. Overall,
Bonnie says neither pinks nor halibut seem promising for 2018.
The halibut quotas look like they're coming down too. And then from a Kodiak perspective, we're not expecting pink salmon to be that great. So there's going to be some less revenue for those participants. And I don't see how they can make it all up.
The parent year for the 2018 pink salmon season was 2016, which was a disastrous season for pinks in the Gulf, and the Alaska Department of Fish and Game is projecting that 2018 may also be a less than stellar return. At its meeting, the Fisheries Workgroup spoke about several possible moves forward. One was to seek a disaster declaration through a joint city and borough letter to the governor's office. Another was to do outreach to make sure the public is aware of the wide-ranging consequences of the cod decline.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard-accepted hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their family. AMSEA at amsea.org or 907-747-3287.
The slash to Pacific cod allocations has fishermen and processors around the Gulf deciding what to do when the season kicks off in January. KBBI's Aaron Bolton has more.
Yeah, it's going to be a big deal to quite a bunch of us. I'm guessing we're going to be looking for stuff to do by end of February at the latest.
Alleray Carroll works as an engineer for Bering Marine Corporation in the summer. But during the winter months, he fishes for Pacific cod in state waters near Kachemak Bay. Pacific cod fishing is Alaska's second largest fishery by volume, bringing in $186 million in 2015. And the fishery is open during a time when there's not much else going on. Once 2018's total allowable catch of 13,000 metric tons has been landed, the season is over, and that may have some looking for work to get them through the winter. Next year's numbers also have some fishermen wondering if it might be better to just wait for other fisheries to open. But Carroll says he still plans on fishing.
You know, it won't be any different. It'll just be shorter. Last year we fished from December until 8th of April or something like that. So it was a long season. This one's going to be pretty fast and furious. I'm thinking the federal pot quota will be caught within 3 weeks, and the state water pot quota won't, I don't think it'll last a month.
Others aren't so sure. Eric Velsko fishes for Pacific cod, but also targets halibut and sablefish, which usually ramp up in March. Velsko also uses his boat as a fish tender in the summer. He says he may just wait for those fisheries, but halibut quotas are also expected to be on a downturn, which doesn't leave much room for either halibut or sablefish to pick up the slack.
So yeah, just maybe a few lean years, you know, we'll just have to try to pick up as much longline quota as we can and maybe extend the tender contract or, you know, try to do whatever we can to, you know, maintain what we've been doing. But I think we're going to be well under what we've been bringing in for at least a few years here.
Others say next year's quota doesn't necessarily mean the season is doomed. Mike McCune manages the Fish Factory, a Homer-based processor, and McCune says he will keep the plant operating through February, despite the decline.
We don't know where the fishing's going to be good, where it's going to be poor. If the quota for the federal season is, of course, quite small. However, if the fishing is slow in other regions and relatively decent in our area, that will allow for us to stay busy longer than the 80% cut would indicate.
The market may also compensate for the decline. Pacific cod hovered around 45 cents per pound in 2017. As for what prices might jump to, McCune says that's something he can't predict.
I've got no idea on that. If I knew the answer to that, I probably wouldn't have to work for a living anymore.
McCune doesn't expect a massive spike in prices because other cod fisheries around the U.S. and in other countries may stabilize the price per pound. But cod fishermen like Carroll say if prices jump to 60 cents per pound, that may help carry them through the winter months. Reporting in Homer, I'm Aaron Bolton.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by AK Teach, now enrolling K-12 homeschool students throughout the state of Alaska, creating partnerships that are flexible, family-friendly, and unique to your child. More information is available at AK Teach or at 907-942-0667.
And that's all for this week's Alaska Fisheries Report. We had help from KBBI's Aaron Bolton and Homer, and KHNS's Barrett Wilbur and Haynes. From KMXT in Kodiak, I'm Kayla DeRoche.